Welcome back to Directly Current, the EV Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Max Patton, and on this episode, I'm speaking with Declan Kavanaugh, who is a college student and intern at Tello Trucks, a company building a very exciting Mini Cooper-sized electric truck that has the capabilities of a Toyota Tacoma, if not greater capacity. Now, of course, I have to note, Tello is a startup. Their fate is far from sealed in stone. It's a very, very hard journey to build a volume production car, but the team is seriously passionate. They've got veterans from Tesla and all around the EV industry. They've caught the attention of car lovers like Jay Leno with appearances on his program, and they seem to be on the right path. Similarly, I think Declan and his passion are really infectious. And like our earlier guest, Andrew Lambrecht, I think he's an amazing example of what the EV industry is offering to the US because, well, it's giving us electrical engineers like Declan and seriously promoting a future that seems bright and full of high-skill, high-paying jobs. So enjoy this episode because Declan and I are going to sit down and talk about some of the history of electric cars, which he is intimately aware with because he has spent many of his weekends in college restoring, believe it or not, cars as old as the 1970s that were electric in his garage with modern battery technology, learning how they work, and of course applying it now to what he's doing at Tello Trucks. I think this is going to be a really fun one, especially for the nerdier among you. And if you are less nerdily inclined, you probably will learn a little bit about the technology in this episode. We'll do our best to break down all of the vocab. So please enjoy this little deep dive into some of the history and the engineering of electric cars. All right, Declan Kavanaugh, welcome on to Directly Current. So much to talk about today between the work you're doing now at Tello, but also the history of EVs, which you have dove into yourself with a lot of garage projects. So for people who aren't familiar, you did the YouTube channel Electric Garage, where you've uploaded videos restoring electric cars made in the 1970s, actually in Colorado of all places, alongside other compliance cars through the decades and everything. But I think it's a useful historical illustration of just how long these cars have been made. So can you explain what the heck the Unique Mobility Electric was?
Yeah, it was my foray into electric cars. It was a low production electric car made in Denver, Colorado, Englewood to be more specific. They only made about 75 of them. It was by a company called Unique Mobility, which started as a fiberglass manufacturer. But they decided to, the owner really liked kit cars for Volkswagen Bugs and stuff like that. And he really wanted to make his own race car. And he figured what better way to do it? Fuel crisis, Iran-Iraq war, Iranian revolution. He decided to make his race car electric. And unfortunately, through engineering and bureaucracy and budgeting, it turned out not really looking like a race car. It looked like a blob that was melting in the middle. But yeah, ran off lead acid batteries. It was a two-door coupe. They also had a hatchback variant, but it ran off of lead acid batteries, about 100 volt, and a 32 horsepower chunk wound electric motor. And as far as I'm aware, this was the first commercially available car with regenerative braking.
Yeah, so a game changer of sorts, but also a curiosity of the time. You have a ton of history in your channel you've documented. We'll link that for visual aid if viewers want to check that out. Also, in my days out of spec, we did a video touring your garage with that, as well as some other interesting things like the city car, which, speaking of ugly early electric cars,
yeah.
Those are like a little, like, if people say the Cybertruck is a triangle, and it is, but the city car is, or the commuter car, I believe it was later called, is
both,
literally a triangle.
Thing. Yeah. I believe it was a Jalopnik article that referred to that era of EV design as the crap era. And I feel that's very fitting. It was just crazy designs. Nothing looked normal.
Yeah. And to be fair, it's not, like you said, lead acid batteries, motors that could barely do regen because they were, in many cases, still brushed motors. They weren't like the disconnecting induction and the hyper-efficient permanent magnet stuff we have today. And you didn't have the supply chain, right? This was before the Tesla Roadster was even a twinkle in engineers' eyes, or the GM EV1, and the idea of using the technology that would enable, for a normal person to understand, a car to go on the highway. Like, I think you've probably driven your electric and some other of these cars on the highway, but you probably shouldn't. Like, that's what it was like.
It handled itself surprisingly well the one time I was brave enough to do it. And I say that, but it was actually an accident. There was a road closure, and I didn't realize it was redirecting me to the highway. So a terrifying, unplanned test, but it actually handled itself pretty well. But the city cars, no. City cars can't go on the highway, but The electric handled itself fine, but that was with the upgraded battery system.
And at this point, it was like for the engineers who basically built this in the garage. I guess they had a production facility, but the people building this, they sold a few of them in Colorado. And the vehicles essentially were used by people out of their house with the range that they had. There was no idea of a DC fast charging network, of this replacing all transportation yet. As you said, it was this experimentation of building initially, I guess, a sports car, even though that's not really what it turned into, out of the fuel crisis and the recognition even back then that it wasn't sustainable for us to keep burning gasoline, not just for environmental reasons, but geopolitical and all of that as well.
Yeah, a lot of it got sold. A lot of them got sold to utility companies. But an interesting mm-hmm. technology that they kind of developed that we're seeing now with like NIO is battery swapping. So the batteries in the electric yeah. were specifically designed to be swappable. So their theory was you'd have two battery packs. One you'd take out, charge, and put the other one that was already fully charged back in. From my experience, it was not that easy. They are heavy, but that was their idea. But yeah, a lot of the early technology was developed in this. A big thing was the shunt mount motor, where a lot of people are using these series wound motors, which can't regen. That's the reason why a lot of these old cars don't have regen, but the mm-hmm. shunt wound motor could regen. And through that, they also worked with a guy named Oba in Chicago, who had a history with diesel electric trains. And with him, they were able to develop these custom motor controllers. And you look at them, they're big metal bricks of just transistors, all BJTs, mm-hmm. no MOSFETs back then. But yeah, they really took this engineering, like this lead acid and this really old motor that was only 32 horsepower and weighed a ton. And they developed it into the newer technologies to the point where the company still exists to some degree today. And they were a leader in making new AC motors. So the technology was very relevant and it really started the development, and it is what inspired some companies like Audi and BMW to start getting into the electric game early on.
Yeah, and believe it or not, even though now the Germans in some ways aren't necessarily leading on every way in the EV front, they early on, Audi and BMW really were some of the volume manufacturers to take this seriously, maybe yeah, with the help of like Unique Mobility. And it's funny, like I wrote in one of your electrics, and like some of the things about that car, the idea of battery swapping the motor that could regeneratively brake and recharge the battery from slowing down. All of this is really bleeding edge technology for the time, of course. And yet they also have the defroster is a hairdryer.
So a literal like, Gillette hairdryer, yeah.
People make jokes about Tesla and to a lesser extent Rivian and some of the startups not knowing how to screw together cars today. But like this was literally just people who were really smart people, but like they maybe did not know how to actually build a car.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of them were taken from the military, interestingly enough. A lot of people who had served in Vietnam and worked on the machinery then, they hired a lot from that, particularly my mentor who used to work for the company, Jim McCullough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really smart guys, but not necessarily automotive engineers. And it definitely shows the cars held together with drywall screws and prayers.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all the more commendable because like you said, for the Translite for audience, like MOSFET, FinFET, this is all transistor technology. And as you can imagine, computers have come a long way in the decades since. And it's really electronics and computers that also enable electric cars, because the control motors, you need inverters and you need all this stuff to make it work, to make regen work, to have any kind of firmware, let alone software, to enable that vehicle to work. And of course, that's relevant for combustion cars too, but even more so for electric cars. So what got you involved? Like you mentioned connecting with McCullough and the people at the company. How did you actually get, like, how did you learn what the electric was? How did you get involved with restoring them in your garage? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, at the time, this was around when I was 16, 17 years old, I was planning on going into the film industry. And for a time I did after high school. My brother was really the car guy, and I would like to go out to the garage and help him on his cars, on his gas cars. And so I got more into it. But what really got me more interested in cars was the weird cars. And so long story short, the Isuzu Viacross was really my main introduction. Oh, cars can be weird and interesting.
It's ugly cars, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw one sit in a park one day and I was like, what is that? And so it really got me into this world of weird cars. And one day my brother Quinn comes into my room at midnight or something. And he's like, you got to see what I just found on Craigslist. And it was an electric. And I was like, I got to buy it. It was $1,000. I was 16 years old. I had $1,000 to my name. Went out the next day, took $1,000 out in cash. Unfortunately, I didn't end up buying that one. We took a look at it and we were like, we don't know what we're doing with this. At that point, I thought higher voltage meant higher range. I knew genuinely nothing about electric cars. But I kept looking and I was really interested in this car. And at this time, there was nothing online about this car. And my big thing was, I really want people to know about this car, because the more I learned about it and the more I got in contact with like Jim McCullough and the ex-CEO John Gould, I was like, people should know about this. This is like a really important part of automotive history. And luck would have it, another one popped up on Facebook Marketplace, and that was the one I bought. And got to give shout out to my parents. It was a bit above my price range, but they saw it as a good learning opportunity. They helped me buy that first one, and it took me a year and a half working with Jim McCullough throughout high school to get that one running. But through that, I really gained a passion for working on these electric cars. And it took me a few more years to figure it out, but I started realizing like, hey, maybe film industry is, it's fun. I love doing it. Like I still do it to an extent with YouTube, and I'm writing a comic and all that fun stuff. So I still do that, but electric vehicles really are my passion. And I was super lucky to discover that early on in my life. And I'm really grateful that I actually have discovered my passion. A lot of people haven't found their passion, but I'm one of the lucky ones. And it just turns out to be electric cars.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Everyone talks about how we need more electrical engineers, and here you just found that career through this lark basically on eBay and having to fix the car yourself. Because obviously the way it came, a lot of work needed to be done. And since then, I think you swapped the batteries to lithium. You did a lot of stuff on the electrics you've bought since then, right?
Yeah, it's actually torn to pieces right now. I'm doing a whole motor swap with UQM PowerPhase Pro 100 out of a Coda. Same company, but 3 decades later.
A few decades later, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love the original motor, but it's so unreliable, and I really want to make this thing into my daily driver. And so the higher voltage will allow me to add CCS, and I'll be able to add air conditioning and
heating.
So
you can fast charge it.
Exactly. So that's the
project. And Electrify America will just let you plug it into their network or the public
network? Yeah, yeah. It's all done internally in the car on a CCS computer. Yeah, as long as you're setting the station the correct signals. And yeah, you could, any project car, any e-swap, can have DC fast charging at the right voltage with the right engineer.
And that's so fascinating. I love it. You came, you were a film guy, you were in the arts and stuff. And of course, it sounds like you were into cars as well. But like, I'm well familiar with this, I'm sure. So many people in the car world and the tuner world are very hostilely opposed to electric cars, maybe for some reasons that are understandable to the uninformed. The idea of, oh, this is just a soulless utility. It's a washing machine. It's an appliance. There's no way someone can repair it or fix it for themselves or tune it. And like, all of that's not true. Does it make beautiful V8 noise? No, it's a little different. But in its own ways, obviously we've seen of Tesla, of Lucid Motors, of Rivian, you can push performance in all kinds of new ways. And in the home tuner world too, we even saw like Ford sell the crate motor for the Mach-E, right? That was a very small scale thing. And you can probably buy other better aftermarket motors, but at least that's an automaker dipping their toe into the space. And so what do you think of that? Like the convergence, right? The car tuning world, it feels, has not caught up to the fact that like can do a lot with electric cars. I don't know. Like, why do you think that hasn't caught on?
I'm sure coming from the YouTube space much more to an extent than I have, I'm sure you've seen the comments. You're not a real car guy. What people get very angry about people owning electric cars. I've never really understood it. And I think it just comes down to they've never driven one and they've never worked on one. And it really takes that experience to understand why people love these cars so much. And I always see this argument like, oh, you can't work on them, you can't fix them. And I have not found that to be true at all. Honestly, I've had way better experiences working on project electric cars than I have project gas cars. So I really think that stigma around electric cars can't be fun, electric cars can't be project cars, really just stems from people who don't know what they're talking about. When it comes to the conversion space, I'm absolutely a jerk and I like to piss people off. Especially car guys.
So it's like always taking an old combustion car chassis and making an electric drivetrain. Right?
Yeah, so I'm always for, I don't care what car it is. I always say, if I own that, I'd convert it to electric. I have my own dream. I want a 240. I want to do a 240 swap. I want to do a PT Cruiser swap. Just because I imagine how angry a Mustang driver would be getting gapped by a freaking PT Cruiser with dual
But
Tesla
also,
motors.
I guess historically, people will be like, you took this Nissan Skyline or you took this Porsche, you took this beautiful car and you ruined it. And in most cases, and this is true with combustion cars too, when you take a car and you restore it, usually that's probably a donor vehicle, right? It's not a vehicle that's been treated very well. You're actually taking something that's old and wasn't being used and you're giving it a new life.
That's what a lot of people don't realize is, at a certain point, like, the car is just going to sit and rot in somebody's backyard if nothing's done about it. So really, converting it to electric gives it new life. And it does, I don't know, I'm not a purist. I don't think it hurts the cars at all. I just like to see cars being driven. I don't care if it's electric, if it's gas. I just like to see cars getting driven. And electric is a way to keep them on the road longer and make them more sustainable and make them more fun.
So, yeah, and fun's the name of the game here. Honestly, that's why people emotionally connect to cars. If we didn't have an emotional connection to cars, we would all be driving RAV4s or something, right?
The original RAV4 EV was a cool car.
You have done it. Yeah, you restored for Kyle Connor, the YouTuber, our friend. The first generation EV, which, believe it or not, was Toyota's proprietary own electric vehicle technology in, what, the late 90s, right?
Early 2000s, yeah. That was a fun car.
And then later on, they had the second generation, which was actually a collaboration of Tesla. I believe it was Model S motor in there and an actual lithium ion. But just, you've done a lot of this history and this charting. What do you think is the missing link? Because it sounds 70s, 80s, people are building some weird electric cars. No one has pretensions of them replacing every vehicle. There's some fun with that. And then it seems like there's a dark age. And it's not really until the Tesla Roadster that we see any idea of like electric cars being a volume thing. I guess there was the GM EV1, which technologically was significant, but they didn't seem to come back on the market until the 2010s. So why do you think that is? Why was there that gap?
It came in waves where after this kind of push, then gasoline got cheaper again in the 80s and early 90s, and then people started becoming more aware of climate change. But throughout this entire time, companies were developing their battery technologies. Ford was working on this molten sodium battery technology that didn't really go anywhere. There was a guy, really famous guy, John Goodenough, who was developing the lithium ion battery during this
time.
What
a name for a battery engineer.
Really, this guy, though, if you ever get a chance to look into the history of the lithium ion battery, John Goodenough is an absolute legend. Yeah. Amazing guy, died doing what he loved.
Rest
he was never happy with what he made. He died working on a solid state. Amazing guy, but that's besides the point.
And he didn't just change the car world, for context, for listening. Our smartphones, batteries, laptops, everything, we all owe a huge debt to him. And of course, other interests.
Amazing guy. I recommend the book, The Long Hard Road to Lithium Ion. I can't remember the author, but it's a really good read for anyone who's interested in the history of batteries. But anyway, getting back on topic, there's this big gap where a lot of research was being done, but not a lot of it was being put into consumer vehicles. There wasn't a huge consumer demand. But we did see this blip with the EV1 and the first gen RAV4 EV and stuff like the Nissan Altra and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it ignited people, and they're like, oh, electric cars can exist. But then it gets a little gray. No one thing knocked it down, but there were a lot of, it was like death by a million cuts during the early 2000s. And people were just kind of like, yes, that dream has died, that ship has sailed. But in the background, people like John Goodenough and the people behind ACP, AC Propulsion, were still developing this technology. And they had the idea, maybe we put laptop cells into an electric car. And that's really what started. It really is just hobbyists in the garage that brought it back. And obviously there was Mark Tarpening and Martin Eberhard who came by ACP and were like, hey, we love what you're doing. We're businessmen. Let's market this. Let's make this into a project and into an actual product. And that's where we really started to see the resurgence. So really, a lot of the EV industry owes itself to just people tinkering in their garage and just trying new things and shoving laptop batteries into cars.
Yeah, and it worked out very well, right? AC Propulsion, Martin Eberhard, and that whole posse became Tesla, right? The Tesla Motors, then later Tesla. And they definitely owe whatever has become of Elon Musk nowadays, for good or bad. Elon also got involved later on, not a founder of the company, but he came along and helped.
You got to have that
money.
Rich guy to fund you. That's Slate
you
and
need
Bezos
the,
right now. You got to have
that rich
fund
guy. Baby, the Emerald Mine heir, whatever you want to call him. But he raised money for Tesla at crucial times, helped them scale from a curiosity to Arnold Schwarzenegger wanted a Tesla Roadster to like the biggest automaker in the world by some counts. And now the Model Y is the best selling vehicle. And so obviously Tesla is struggling a little bit now, but if you just purely map it onto one company, that shows you how meteoric the success has been. And of course, that's also meant that what we call the legacy automakers now suddenly take electric much more seriously.
Sometimes not serious enough in my opinion, but yeah.
Some of them Ford. Definitely more slowly than others. The market's been confusing, especially here in America, where we just can't, like, when it comes to the policy, the political administration, right, we keep seesawing back and forth. Nonetheless, like, the engineers are hard at work, the vehicles are getting better, and we're in this new age now. So you're working for this startup, Tello Trucks, which is doing a really cool thing. It's basically like a Mini Cooper-sized vehicle or Mini Cooper length-ish with a longer wheelbase. Toyota Tacoma size truck bed, a little bigger actually. It's a four-door pickup truck with a bed that's the size, the similar proportions in terms of parking to a Mini Cooper. So really cool, like, demonstration of packaging technology, and it's still a prototype, but really cool idea for a company. There's also Slate recently, which is also doing a mini pickup truck, a bit of a different approach, less premium, but really cool stuff in the space. So what brought you specifically to Tello and the mission that they're doing with this new niche of making a small electric pickup truck?
I always knew I wanted to work for startups. I have no desire to work for OEMs. It doesn't seem fun. I like to really get my hands on with the development process when there's not a ton of bureaucracy behind it. So I knew I wanted to get into startups. And for a while, I was following Aptera, and I still really love Aptera, and I really want to see them succeed. I have a reservation. But for those who don't know, Aptera is a solar-powered startup in Southern California.
And they're
But
trying to
what
make the
I...
most efficient car in the world. And it's been
Exactly.
many, many years long, grueling delay and process. And some people think that Aptera will never ship. Who knows? But yeah.
I think they will. I think they will, personally, with some of the behind-the-scenes view. It takes a lot of money to make a car.
It's
But
not.
no, it is not. But what really stood out to me with Tello is I've always held the belief small car better. My brother has an MGB, which is a tiny British sports car, and I love that thing. I love the Fiat 500. I love the Mini Coopers. So I've always had this philosophy of small cars better. And I saw early on the potential of electric vehicle technology to make cars smaller because you don't have these massive combustion components parts, but we're still putting massive hoods on electric cars for the frunk space and whatever. But we don't need that. We can't do away with that. So when I saw Tello, it was an Electrek article that I first got introduced to them. I was like, this is what I've really been interested in. This is really what I want to see. So I followed them for a little bit, and I'm an electrical engineering student at ASU. And it came time to find an internship. And I was like, hey, I found the CEO's Discord account. I'm just going to message the CEO on Discord. And I messaged him like, hey, you guys need an electrical engineer intern? And he was like, yeah. Come out whenever. That was really exciting for me. And I got to go out there and work with the team over winter break. And I'm going back next week, actually, for summer break to continue helping. But no, it's a really amazing team. And I really got to shout out all the engineers who have worked on this car. I've worked on some engineering teams where it's a lot of bureaucracy, but it truly everybody who is on this very small team of engineers at Tello is passionate about what they're doing. None of them are there to make a quick buck. The CEOs are very down to earth and always willing to help us out in the garage. It's just a really refreshing view and kind of something that we see with a lot of earlier startups. It really is the quintessential pinnacle of what a startup is and what most people think a startup is. And it's really amazing what Tello's been able to do with the smaller budget and the very small team that they've had. They have one completed prototype, and I don't think it's secret. They have another one that's almost ready. And these are very complete prototypes too. These have air conditioning. These have functioning software. These are very impressive builds. No matter what, with startups, you're always going to see people claiming, oh, vaporware, oh, this will never happen. And I don't think that's the case for most of them. I don't think that's the case for Aptera. I don't think that's the case for Tello. I don't think that's the case for Slate. I think these all are just the creation of very passionate engineers who really want to see a change in the automotive space. And I think it's very admirable. And I'm very lucky to be a part of that movement that's happening in the EV space.
Yeah, and there's no denying that passion and that excitement and the talent too. I think like Forrest at Tello, right, is
Yep, Forrest Moore.
ex-Tesla from the early days and a lot of ex-automotive talent. You saw that at Rivian, right? This interesting combination of like Tesla alumni, people from legacy automakers who were bored and not able to do what they really wanted to do. So in that sense, the startups are really exciting. But also, I think like consumers, like American customers have some well-reasoned skepticism given that especially in 2020 and 2021, there was this crazy period where it was very easy to raise private money. Interest rates were really low. And so you saw like Fisker, you saw Polestar at an IPO. I drove a Polestar. I love it, by the way, but like, not doing amazingly right now. They're supportive of the company. In that case, Fisker was not, and they went under. Lucid Motors has struggled. And that's a startup that
Canoe.
undeniably has like class-leading technology. And yet it's still a long, hard road for them. It's really difficult. It's difficult enough making the prototype, but also scaling that to production and getting that to work, as we've seen, is really difficult too. No one has a crystal ball, but what do you think it is that gives you confidence in the ones that might succeed, the ones that have a chance that people can have more confidence in?
I think it is those failed startups that makes me optimistic because we've had all this time, we've had all this experience, we've had all this time to learn what not to do. We just saw Canoe go under because of corrupt management and multiple layers
Nikola.
Nikola. A lot of it comes down to what I've seen is a lot of they build up too fast, and they build these thousands of layers of middle management. The CEOs are making ungodly money and they get a taste of the power. And I think another thing, especially with Canoe and Nikola, is they just kept changing vision. They didn't have Canoe, for example, started out with this subscription model and then very quickly realized, oh, nobody wants that. So let's change pace. Let's change again. We'll go more into utility vehicles. I think it comes down to not having a clear vision. It's a lot of these factors, but because of all these failed startups, even dating back to the early 2000s, Coda, CT&T, stuff like that, you can really take a lot of lessons. And I do see that with these new startups. I've had some time, I spent a lot of time with Jason Marks, who's the CEO of Tello. I spent some time with Chris Anthony, CEO of Aptera. And I've spent a lot of time with these guys, and they're very aware of the position they're in. And they're always staying on top of what's happening in the EV space and looking at, okay, why did this company fail? What can we do differently? How can we not fall into that same trap? So I really think what makes me optimistic is that there's all this experience built up in those failures for these people to learn from, these companies to learn from, and really just putting those thoughts first and like looking at what do we do right and what do we not do. It's trial and error at a certain point, and we've seen what doesn't work. And I really do think, and especially with supply chains, obviously with the Trump administration, that's rocky at the moment, but it does make with the available parts and stuff. And this is something that Tello focuses on a lot too. There's a lot of off the shelf stuff that we can use. It's the barrier of entry is a lot lower than it used to be. So you got companies like Magna, which Fisker worked with, who helped them bring their car to market faster. So there's a lot going for these companies. And if they play their cards, I do think that all three of these major startups in the US right now can succeed because of the failures of the past companies.
Yeah. And also I think what might differentiate, like, and I give Slide a lot of credit. We want to have them on the show at some point. Obviously they've had a lot of buzz, but in some sense, as idealistic as I think that cheap bare bones vehicle is, maybe like the vehicle Tello is building actually does speak, at least to my eyes, more clearly to a niche in the American market, because American car buyers overbuy cars. They want cars with 300 whatever miles of range, 500 horsepower.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
That's what Tello is doing. And yeah, it's not going to be as cheap as the Slate, but you're still, what are they targeting? Like a $50,000 price.
The base model will be 41 before incentives. So
the truth is no one knows, right? There will be tariffs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's what
changes.
It comes down to with Slate as well. And I could sit here all day, talk about comparing Slate and Tello and why they're apple and oranges and why I think Slate maybe isn't the best financial deal, but it doesn't really matter. What matters is people are excited about these companies and people are putting money where their mouth is with these reservations. And these companies are making progress in areas that I think all three major startups do have a niche in the American market. And I think that it's great that we're seeing all that. I think we're due for a disruption. We've had Ford and Chevy and Dodge and all these people, and they're boring. They've stagnated. They're stale. Yeah. They just do. And so I get really excited when people get excited about these newer companies, and I'm excited to see these new cars pushing what EVs can be and what they can do.
Absolutely, because if we want to bring in like American manufacturing jobs, I think it's a lot more attractive when you have companies like hopefully Tello, definitely now Rivian, who's at least in a little more secure place, producing original unique vehicles that inspire people and therefore create new market opportunities and then push the boundaries. Because if everyone, like, all credit again to BMW or Mercedes or whomever, but they're building more iterative vehicles and platforms, and they're not pushing the market in the same way. And so I feel, just editorializing here, that the Chinese competition is much more threatening, even for a Porsche.
Because
you can get something that's like a Taycan. You can get something that is like a BMW i5, i7, what have you. But you can get something like a Rivian, really. You can't get something like a Tello. These are just such unique, weird vehicles, but weird in a good way by virtue of the electric powertrain. And I think, like, in the way that Lucid, like you said, has that massive hood. Cool. They have a massive frunk. It's well engineered. Why not just build a vehicle with way less frontal overlap over the wheel and different packaging? This is the promise of electric in the first place. And it's a very bold move. And like you said, it seems like going lean is the way to do it, especially in an environment like this. And Tello is doing that at the moment. I wish them all the best of luck. And I think you're going to get an amazing experience doing that. And just as someone who's worked with this stuff, nuts and bolts, how do you feel about the prospect of, like, tariff policy aside, of people building these things in the United States, which obviously it's going to be, let's be honest, more expensive than China. But do you think if these vehicles are unique enough or they're inspiring enough, do you think that's like a future for this industry?
I don't pretend to understand politics on a super deep level, but
yeah,
the push for more American manufacturing is only a good thing for Americans. I don't want to get too political. I don't agree with the way it's being done, but bringing manufacturing to us is a good thing in some cases. But like you said, it does increase price. And again, not diving too deep into what's happening nowadays, having some manufacturing in Mexico, having some manufacturing, it's not all China, for the record. A lot of it's not China. So
yeah,
it really does allow when you can outsource to other countries. It does help
allies,
make
North American partners or prior partners like Canada and Mexico.
Exactly. Yeah, prior. But yeah, it's a mixed bag. And I think that American manufacturing is good. I'm not overly patriotic, so it's not a big thing to me. But obviously, it seems the direction that the current administration is going, it's forced. It will drive up the price of things, though, like, significantly. There's a reason that manufacturing is often done in other countries, and it's just because cost of materials are less there. Or, especially with electric cars, chips are a big part of it. Like, electronic chips are a big part of the electric vehicle manufacturing process. Batteries are a big part of it. And those are all made overseas. So it's naturally going to be easier to build the cars where the chips and the batteries are than here. And it's going to take a lot more money and a lot more time to move all of that to America. And honestly, I don't think it ever will. I don't think we're ever going to see manufacturing come 100% to America. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm a big advocate for globalization. I love seeing collaboration between countries when it's done right. But yeah, in the current way that it's being done, prices of electric cars and cars in general are going to go up. We're already seeing this. I think it was Ford who recently announced their price changes. It's just going to be what happens. Nobody's happy about it. Maybe some people are happy about it. I don't know. Again, I don't get into the super political side of this, but disagree with the way things are being done now. And I'm a big advocate for globalization, especially when it comes to manufacturing.
Yeah, and maybe it's like the right kinds of manufacturing, because I think there are cooler voices, even in this administration, but especially in the last administration, that realized like certain advanced things, you said some of them, semiconductors, chips, batteries, it's probably a good idea to have some expertise of making them here just for national security purposes. And also, like, those are just higher paying jobs than having people screw together iPhones and other things, which is like economically any person you ask will tell you is untenable. You're not going to have the workforce. You're not going to have the machining to do that. But if we are going to invest in some of that, why don't we do it in the higher margin advanced areas that maybe are more critical to national security? And it's a funny thing to think, but if you can build electric mini trucks, you can build a lot of other things. It's important, I feel, to have some capacity for that. And it's been so cool for me as an enthusiast to see the companies like Rivian revitalize communities like Normal, Illinois. And everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully that can be done. Maybe some of it in California, maybe some of it in states with lower taxes. Who knows? But if some of it can be done in the U.S., it's definitely neat. And just the product is so darn interesting. I know it's such an uncertain moment, but it sounds like you're, just to wrap up here, still very optimistic about EVs, despite all of the crazy, both geopolitical and national things happening right now.
Yeah, I think it sucks, the time we live in. I hate it here. I don't want to be here anymore. I hate it. Every day is a living nightmare. Let me out. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I have to hold on hope that things will go back to normal. Things will stop being so crazy at a certain point, hopefully. And I really think that the market for EVs, and especially these newer EVs, is strong enough to outlast all the idiocracy and all this craziness. And so I'm very optimistic about it. It's going to take some time. There's going to be some healing that has to take first before we can go back to the growth rate where we were before. But I don't think EVs are going anywhere. I don't think the startups are going anywhere. Yeah, it's too late for gas is always my thought. This is just something I always see is every time someone who's never driven an electric car drives an electric car for the first time, you can see them be like, oh, this is better. It happened with my boyfriend when he drove his Chevy Bolt for the first time. My friend Robert, again, with a Chevy Bolt. you could really see the gears turning and be like, oh, this is better. And so it really just takes more people discovering that, hey, maybe the prejudice against electric cars is unbased. And we're seeing a consistently growing market for these vehicles. They're not going anywhere. The people who think it's a passing fad, they'll pass before the fad does. So,
And the engineers, they've gone underground before, they might do it again too, right? Like to our point earlier about this idea of a dark ages. Yeah, maybe the market in the US, for better or worse, will not adopt EVs at an immediate rate. Nonetheless, I think that engineer at BMW is going to be much more excited to work on the next generation battery technology than figuring out how to make their auto engine start-stop system 2% more efficient so they can comply with the latest regulations. Because I'm sorry, people, to break it to you, like it or not, regulations are tightening on combustion, and that technology has a limited lifespan for many reasons.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, very interesting. But thanks so much for all your input, Declan. Really appreciate it, and you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was fun.
That's all for this week in Directly Current. We will be back in 2 weeks with another very exciting guest from the EV industry. Please stay tuned to our podcast feed for future episodes. And in the meantime, check out all the work that's being done at the American EV Jobs Alliance at evpolitics.org. We'll link all of this in the description. There is a lot to discuss this summer between ongoing tariff policy that continues to seemingly harm the auto industry at large. But nonetheless, as this episode is further proof of, engineers are hard at work and EVs are continuing to be a thing. I just hope that they're American ones. I hope you do too. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks.